Woohoo!
Welcome to the Summer Fall Play Podcast. We are so happy to be with you today.
Though we're a little thrown off our podcast game. We just did three woohoos. We're like, yeah. Oh my gosh, time to restart.
Actually, on the last woohoo, I said it before Megan, and she's like, David, what the fuck's your problem?
What are you doing right now?
What are you doing?
Well, I think it's because, so we're recording in the afternoon. Usually we have Tuesday morning podcast recording sessions, and I've had like a barrage of meetings and life things, and it snowed. So we're a little thrown off our game, but usually we have this like amazing coffee pee feedback cycle between the two of us. We've got it down perfectly, and I can't have caffeine in the afternoon. So I'm like, oh, I've really messed up this equation.
Yeah, now we've been coffee pee, 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 pee. I just peed myself a little bit. Pretty much lost all insight on what to do with my life. But we are both shirtless with the sun coming in. So there are just good vibes in this room right now.
I would put a caveat on that. There's sun coming in, but there's 8 inches of snow outside right now because Boulder in spring is a little chaotic. I kind of like it. It's fun. It's like, you know, you never know what to expect.
Boulder is so weird, as is the cheddar cheese that is on the desk. And I came in to the bedroom right before this podcast to take a nap. And I see Megan there. She's on her computer. It sounds like she's on a class. I'm like, oh, I don't want to bother you. And so I was like, Megan, I'll go to the other room to take my nap. And she's like, no, I'm in my class in that room too. So she was taking classes, I think, in maybe three rooms at the time. How many classes were you taking?
Two classes at once. And so, yeah, this quarter is very busy for me. And it's not ideal for comprehension. So ideally, that would be like, you know, I'm comprehending at 2x. I'm pretty sure I'm comprehending at 0.6x. I've like reduced even from one.
Your cheese cleaning abilities have certainly gone down.
Slightly. Yeah, it's funny. So we're recording in my office and I love cheddar cheese on everything. And
yeah.
This cheddar cheese has been here since this morning because that's kind of the vibes I got going on right now.
It's a little melty. It's kind of feeling the shirtless vibes too. Are you eating it plain or are you eating it in things?
No, I put it on soup. I don't know. I don't know if cheddar cheese and soup really works, but in my head it was amazing.
That's gross. It might be good for our phobia conversation later. But yeah, you're super busy and you're rocking it, I think, in the context of that. But the podcast has been a little bit dominated by me this week.
Oh my gosh. Well, it's crazy. Yeah, I have prelim exams coming up for my PhD end of April. They've actually been continuously pushed back from COVID. And so like I finally actually have to take them. And it's been nuts. So this brings me back to med school. I think in med school, I was like just trying to cram in so many different things. And like after med school, I kind of got used to the idea of having just like a little bit more like unstructured time for creative brain space, really enjoyed it.
Not having a Google Calendar that is all one color.
Actually, no,
down.
It's just like, there's like multiple, I'm taking multiple meetings at once. So it's like a Tetris of Google Calendar. It's kind of gnarly. But yeah, I really miss that creative brain space. It's fascinating. I mean, I think like old me would have been like, oh, Megan, you're not being productive.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? And now that I'm like actually being super productive, I'm like, I miss that creative time. Where's my brain going?
Do you think you're going to try to plan more empty space with things in the future?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it's really like foundational for my creativity. Well, it's funny because even like, you know, I was going into the podcast like outline to see what you put in there. And I reflected on the fact it's like, I hardly thought about the podcast this week, or like, you know, my brain wasn't going in those creative directions that we like so often harness on this podcast.
That's so interesting to think about, because like when you talk about the deep focus, you're just like lasering in on anything. And that's for every single person. But that might actually be super bad. It's almost like being a runner and training very specifically for a race, but losing the general adaptations that it takes to actually go fast.
That's an amazing analogy. And I think before, honestly, like before I met you and like during med school, I was like really convinced that laser focus was, I was like, oh my gosh, Megan, like this is your secret weapon. Like this is what makes you great, et cetera. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? And it's truly not.
Yeah, I remember you know, you would do long study blocks and you would come out and it'd almost be like you're underwater or something. Like, it, you know, that your brain was so far into whatever it was into that there wasn't anything else waiting for it. And I mean, I really think about that with writing. Like, how can I like escape it so that I don't just write about a topic. I want to write about life, even if I'm writing about VO2 max.
Well, it's funny because I think this podcast, I mean, it gives us that creative, like we can access that creative space and like doing these things outside of coaching and science and like our daily lives and bring it to the podcast. Like, it's just like the space that we get to do it. But what I think is so funny this morning when I came into the podcast outline, you know, I've been busy, so I haven't really been adding to it this week. And the two topics on there, the first one was sex and the second one was UFOs. And I was like, David.
So I think that's a pretty good insight into my general unfocused personality, sex and UFOs.
Actually, we are going to get to UFOs.
Both of those topics are going to happen.
They're coming.
Megan didn't have time. Yes, they are. Megan did not have time to change the subject matters. So we're going to get to that. But in the meantime, I think I'm really proud of you. You've done much stuff here, and you've been a delightful wife through it, delightful podcast host, and you know, maybe not the best cheese cleaner, but we to win some, lose some.
Cheese cleaning might be like 999th on my priority, but no, thank you. That means a lot.
But yeah, I mean, it kind of gets back to being a specialized athlete is kind of like thinking in a specialized way. We wanted to remind everyone that, you know, sometimes as endurance athletes, we get very laser focused on one type of movement pattern, and it might make us a little susceptible to other things.
Well, yeah, we had this reflection. So we talked a couple weeks on here about, we love playing basketball.
Yeah.
And I think like we've been playing basketball a lot, and when we play things, we get very competitive. Like, we don't just go and just like, you know, shoot a few hoops. We're like playing one-on-one. We're playing like horse games, or we're doing all kinds of things. And we were running a couple weeks ago, and all of a sudden we like looked at each other. We were running up a hill, and I'm like, are your legs sore?
Well, the thing is, I think we're both at the point where we didn't want to make the other one feel self-conscious that, oh, maybe we don't feel good. But about 2 miles into this run, we just turned around and was like, this sucked to you? Because this sucks for me. And then we didn't really realize what happened until we got to the top of the hill, and we're like, oh, basketball, not even sore, just legs didn't have anything.
Oh, it was wild.
Yeah.
Like I always loved playing basketball as a kid. And I was like, I had no idea basketball could make me feel this dead.
Yeah. We were so dead. And it echoes a lot of what we see in coaching.
Actually, it's funny. I've seen this. So we, in other areas in our life. So at David's brother's wedding, David has a fear of wedding dancing, which I think is hilarious.
We'll get into
it. It's a very legit fear. But you had like the perfect amount of whiskey where you were super into dancing. And I was like, this is my moment. This is my one shot, my opportunity. We're going to
mom spaghetti.
We're going to dance. And we danced for 3 hours and could barely run the next day.
It was so bad. We lost. I mean, it was basically like a dancing stress fracture in terms of how sore our legs got. We actually see that all the time. We always tell athletes, like, try to be careful with the shoes you wear on the dance floor because you might get an Achilles injury. But also see injuries basically everywhere. I mean, you pointed out like yoga.
Yeah, I actually see a lot of, I mean, yoga is an amazing practice. Yeah. I think it's great for meditation. I do see a lot of high hamstring injuries in yoga. I think like overstretching the hamstrings. Yeah. David actually went to Core Power Yoga with my mom a year ago.
I didn't realize what I was getting into. I know that your mom is a total badass.
My mom is very good at yoga.
But I mean, she is like the strongest, like most flexible person ever. And I was standing beside her like, I don't want to let mom-in-law down. I can't let her down. And as a result, like, my arms are shaking. My legs are shaking.
And it's like so hot in that room. I can't even imagine. But you had a hamstring injury for like 2.5 months after that.
Yeah.
That one Core Power session.
Well, so the next day I did strides, strained my hamstring on that. And it lingered for a really long time. So, you know, I think I did impress your mom-in-law, and perhaps my limp didn't impress you for the next 3 months. And then it also reminds me of an athlete in their log was talking about, oh, I had dance class, but got a little bit injured. And I was like, oh, well, what was the dance move? Because I wanted to try to figure out what it was. And she's like, oh, well, you know, I'm kind of like leaning down with my hips back. And then I'm going in and out, in and out. And I was like, wait, are you twerking? And she's like, oh yeah, that was twerking. I didn't want to like, wasn't sure if that was okay to say, but she must not listen to the podcast.
Sounds a lot like how I dance.
It really is. And so, yeah, we had our first twerking injury in SWAT. And I think that brings up a lot of issues, which gets to the point that was in the podcast outline before, is like, we don't talk enough about like the physical nature of sex. And like all of that.
I'm confused. I mean, it's such a taboo topic. Yeah. Yet it's like practiced worldwide at like, you know, obviously massive rates. We have all these journals of like exercise physiology. And I'm like, where's the Journal of Applied Sex and Molecular Physiology? Like that would be so relevant. Like we don't talk about sex performance. We don't talk about sex injuries. We don't talk about any of this stuff. I mean, and some people do, but it's just, it's not like widespread enough.
Yeah. So we're having fun the other day, this weekend after a long run, I was pretty tired. And all of a sudden I'm like, because my hip flexor fully cramped up, like absolutely seized to the max. But I was like, I have to play through pain. I can't let them see I'm injured.
You crushed it.
Yes. We can just end the podcast there. Best moment of my life just happened on live television. But so, you know, it made me think, wow, I guess I'm not really considering that this is also strenuous activity, and that there's a lot of strenuous activities in life that we do not account for.
Oh my gosh. But it's like, there's no, I mean, what do you do? Do you do like static stretching before this? Do you do dynamic stretching? Like where are the electrolytes?
You probably don't static stretch. They say, at least for running, that static stretching might not be productive.
I was going to say, yeah, I feel like it has to be the Myrtle routine and dynamic stretching.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Static stretching after the fact has got to parallel run.
So I'm going to be doing leg swings, getting the lubricant we talked about last week, and just be like, hey, give me a second. I need to do 10 leg swings in each direction.
But I mean, I feel like there needs to be more about this. Like in the Journal of Applied Sex and Molecular Physiology, like where is the article? The funny thing though is like, I feel like if they did do a study on this, there'd be no female participants. It would be 20 participants and the follow-up time would be 2 weeks and it would be self-reported.
Oh yeah. A lot of men doing manual entries.
Oh my gosh. It would be very biased results.
Yeah. We were looking this up, and actually I saw a tweet that also fed into this idea that It's only a matter of time until Strava adds sex as an activity you record. And I thought that was a pretty cool idea. Like, maybe there is something out there like that, like a social media where you plan and share these things.
Okay, well, I saw the Strava, or yeah. I saw that Twitter, and the best response was, this person wrote, well, a lot of dudes are going to be having manual entries. And that was the best burn on Twitter.
And that being said, though, manual entries are very healthy for most people, especially, you
That's
know,
true. Yeah, take the data out of it.
Get to know your body. Yes, this is really helpful.
So true. But in this, so we did, this morning we wound up doing extensive research on this topic, and we found out that Whoop, which is a, you know, an activity tracking company, looks at HRV, has an option to add sex into your journal so that you can look at it for data. And I was mind blown by this.
The most incredible thing ever. Because, you know, they're saying that it can really be relevant here. And there's a great quote from one of the people that works at the company. I think that's why quantifying it is so important, because the idea isn't that Whoop is going to tell you have sex or don't have sex or all these things. If we can quantify you for what the effect of sex is, now you can go out and make an informed decision.
That's a boss quote
right
there.
Decision. I love that, because like informed by sport or informed sport is how they label supplements that aren't like doped. That's just like, I want you to be undoped with your sex.
Oh, this is fascinating. But I think the other interesting thing too is you can look at HRV and track that performance as it relates to sleep. Because some people, like, you know, when they have sex, their core temperature gets really aroused and it's hard for them to fall asleep. And then other people just conk the heck out. And there's a kind of this like dichotomy there. And you can use Whoop to help predict that, which I think is so cool.
It gets back to the individual responses to stimuli. It's just like training.
Well, talk about advertising. Because after I read this, I bought a Whoop. I mean, I'm serious.
Wait, you did?
Yeah, I bought a Whoop. I mean, so, okay, it was two different things. So
the funny thing is, we have told athletes in the past, oh, no need for those activity trackers. That just makes you self-conscious
like,
about
you don't need to look at the data. See what she does. Judgment on your wrist.
This thing quantifies sex. I'm buying Whoop.
Immediately. Well, it had, I love the color yellow. And so my Whoop is going to have a yellow wristband. And I'm like, this is amazing. It's attractive. It's going to quantify sexy behavior. It's going to be informative. Why not?
I'm excited to learn about all these different things, like basketball, you know, to bring it back. Like, it actually reminds me of the movie Love and Basketball. That's exactly what we're tracking here.
That's 100% what we're tracking. Well, I think I'm fascinated to see how it relates to sleep. I struggle with sleep. And so the next time that I'm poking you at 2 a.m., you might want to wake up.
Yeah, I'll check with my Whoop first to make an informed decision.
An informed HRV decision based on whether you're going to wake up or not.
Lots of poking going on. Okay, so we're going to transition to vaccine follow-up.
That's quite a transition.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's about poking too. we wanted to say, we published an article in Charner, and that we really wanted to emphasize with people to be prepared for, you know, anywhere like a week even of abnormal responses in your body. That doesn't mean it's a big deal, but just be patient.
And also nonlinear responses too. Yeah. So like traditionally, I think a lot of people think about, okay, I'm going to have this vaccine response in the first 24 to 48 hours. But I've seen some people that are totally okay within the first 24 to 48 hours. And then like 3 to 5 days later, start feeling something.
Yeah.
And so it's totally okay. If you're not following this traditional linear trajectory, like a lot of people are right there in that boat with you.
I think inflammation is connected to immunity. So there's these inflammatory mediators that happen to go from shot to immune response. And those don't just say like, oh, it rises right away, you get a little sick and then it's gone. You might have no symptoms at all, but it could be affecting how your muscles contract, or, you know, like soft tissue injury rates or anything like that. And so we're not saying like, don't run. We're just saying really listen to your body. However it feels, like even things that might not feel like they're connected to your like, your things like your mood that might be unconnected to your physical nature.
That's an amazing point. But I also think too, it can be symptoms that are outside the traditional scope of symptoms.
Yeah.
So I know for myself, I felt fine the first 24 to 48 hours after having the vaccine. And then all of a sudden I had this like creeping in brain fog and brain fatigue. And it made me feel down for a couple of days. Like it was fascinating. Like I feel like for me, I'm not like frequent crier. No. I probably like cry a decent amount. I mean, not like anything crazy, but all of a sudden like my crying latency dropped so much. I was crying at like every little thing.
Yeah,
it was fascinating. I got an email that like had constructive criticism and just like a few red dots on this essay I was writing. And I was bawling. I was like, I'm a terrible writer. I'm not worthy. What's going on in my life?
There's like an academic publication or something, which is, you know, all about reviewing and editing.
There's always going to be red
marks. Megan comes out and shows me just a little bit of track changes. It's like, my writing's terrible.
What am I doing with my life? And it's fascinating because then I woke up this morning, I think I'm 5 days now post-vaccine, and it was like that stress had lifted from my brain.
Yeah.
It was weird.
I was at the track pacing an athlete for their workout, and I get to my phone and she just wrote, my joy is back. And I was like, yes, that's awesome. Because I didn't at least put two and two together that it was probably the vaccine until like last night or so. And I was like, oh, wait, This is right around that time.
This is for sure the vaccine.
This is that time of the month or time of the pandemic.
Time of the poke. Or actually, that's a fascinating point that you bring up. We have seen that the vaccine has impacted menstrual cycles for a lot of athletes. So heavier flow, changes in the duration. We've seen it induce menstrual cycles, like all kinds of different things, very individual dependent. But you know, if you're having changes in the menstrual cycle, that can happen too.
Yeah, but on the plus side, all of this stuff is clears up and we've seen everyone get back to absolutely rocking it. But I think it can be a little weird when those responses aren't exactly what you would expect. And to finish on this topic, one of our athletes got the vaccine and their 8-year-old said to them before they got the vaccine, "Daddy, are you going to be a little bitch about this one?" And I was like, "Did your 8-year-old really say that?" He's like, "Yeah." And then the next day, his update, "She was wrong. I was a big bitch about it."
That's incredible. That's an amazing update.
This is like a super high-powered person in the world too. And I'm like, yeah, that's the type of daughter that's going to save the world.
Gotta be honest. I love the athletes that we coach.
It's the best.
It's so like logging into training logs is fantastic. Okay. Now this is we're transitioning to the marital compromise portion of this podcast because this is where David put UFOs in the podcast outline. And I was like, David, we are absolutely not talking about UFOs on the podcast. And we had a little squabble. And so now David has 75 seconds. I'm starting my watch now to talk about UFOs.
Okay, I'm going to try to do it way faster. So if you haven't been paying attention, we have learned that UFOs have been confirmed by the military, and all of these phenomena are fully documented. There's pictures, there's video, and the whole world was just kind of like, okay, that makes sense. It was 2020 at the time. They're like, we don't need to really talk about that.
Well, I'm not going to lie. As much crap as I gave you this morning, I was also really fascinated in it. And I learned that there's this another term called the UAP, which is the Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, which they're now calling it. And I feel like it sounds a little bit more legit than UFOs. But my takeaway from this is like, it's just an unidentified flying object. So this could be from Earth. This could be from another universe. This could be from some sort of life out there.
You know, my feeling on, I've thought about that with aliens. I would love for aliens to actually be here because I think it would show this expansive view of like existence that is actually really cool. It's kind of like my feelings on ghosts. I want to see a ghost so bad because if you see a ghost, it also confirms a lot more about existence that would be super cool.
Okay, that is strange to me because I think I do not want to see a ghost. Really? I think my first reaction if I saw a ghost is, what is wrong with me?
Am I
hallucinating?
Meanwhile, I'm like a classic man. I'm like, my experience is the only experience. That was a real ghost.
And I'll be there and be like, I defer to you, ghost. Yeah. You're not real, but I defer to you. I care about your feelings and thoughts. I'm not going to let you down.
Ghost, uphold this patriarchy. No, it's so true. And so I basically went in, and also this former CIA director, John Brennan, was interviewed and went into this whole thing that we're seeing the phenomena that are the result of something that we don't yet understand and that could involve some type of activity that some may say constitutes a different form of life. So
that was dramatic.
That was dramatic.
Well, you know, if in 2030 these things are confirmed and they're coming from some other source of life other than humans, we're going to look back on this podcast and be like, oh, damn, Megan, I only gave 25 seconds. Marital compromise was not worth it.
So make an informed decision for everyone out there about your feelings on UFOs. That was random. But I feel like that story just totally got glossed over.
You love UFOs. And as soon as you saw that, you're like, Megan, we have to talk about this on the podcast. Like, this is amazing. This is confirming like all my dreams come true.
Yeah. I feel like, you know,
you're going to be that person on the Southwest airline, just looking outside the plane, like every second and being like, where are these flying objects? I'm going to like look away only to get my peanuts. And then I'm coming back to the flying objects.
Yeah. My pants will be down for some reason when you get back. It's going to get really weird. Let's move on. So this is episode 45, which is the Trevor Lawrence episode. We're not going to go through his whole life story. He was the quarterback at Clemson. He's probably going to be
the first pick in the NFL draft.
Yeah, total beast. He has a beautiful flowing hair.
Oh, his hair is beautiful. I'm sure he brushes it like 20 times more than I do.
It's definitely. I mean, you don't brush your hair much. I mean, it's probably approaching infinity. The limit does not exist to channel Mean Girls. So the reason I wanted to highlight him is that he had an interview with Sports Illustrated, and this was the back and forth that happened in that interview that led to a controversy.
I love this quote. "It's not like I need this for my life to be okay. I want to do it because I want to be the best I can be. I want to maximize my potential." And when he's saying it, he's saying football.
Yeah. And then he continues, "I don't have this huge chip on my shoulder that everyone's out to get me and I'm trying to prove everybody wrong. I think that's unhealthy to a certain extent. Just always thinking that you've got to prove somebody wrong. You've got to do more. You've got to be better."
And then his partner Marissa follows up and says, "That usually only leads to sadness as well. Always like striving for something new or better."
And I just thought that was so cool. We don't associate that with like professional athletes. I mean, Michael Jordan would see that quote and would like go be like, this guy isn't a champion.
Well, it's funny. I feel like we have this expectation for pro athletes, like for like top level athletes, that they have to be like pathologically obsessed
that
with the
single-minded
game.
Single-minded focus, like, that laser
ball
focus.
Ball is life about. And nothing else is life.
Yeah. And that ball is not just ball is life, but like winning is life. And like this competitive thing that like, I am not enough unless I do this thing. And the reason that we see champions that might have that perspective is because there have been millions of people that had that perspective and got fucking crushed by it. And then maybe one egg doesn't break when you throw it at the wall. And that egg, you're like, that egg is the egg I want to be like. We don't see all the eggs that were just left there, like just dripping yolk and broken fully.
What I think is fascinating though about this point though, is I feel like there is a slight gender discrepancy. Like I feel like we really expect male professional athletes to have that. And then for female athletes to have this like more balanced approach. And it's almost seen as like, they're too competitive or they're too fiery. I don't know. I feel like there's like some sort of like fascinating dichotomy there.
Yeah. And maybe there's a really good balance for like embracing competition while still like being okay with loving yourself, who you are unconditionally. And probably that gets into whole societal like issues of discrimination and stuff. And Trevor Lawrence had to face, you know,
I mean, he took a ton of criticism for that.
A ton of criticism, not discrimination. He's the whitest man on earth, but the he faced a ton of controversy and he had a great response.
This is what he said. I have a lot of confidence in my work ethic. I love to grind and to chase my goals. You can ask anyone who has been in my life. That being said, I am secure in who I am and what I believe. I don't need football to make me feel worthy as a person. I purely love the game and everything that comes with it. The work, the team, the ups and downs. I'm a firm believer in the fact that there's a plan in my life and I'm called to be the best I can be at whatever I'm doing. Thanks for coming to my TED Talk. Lol. I thought that was a great quote. Also, I feel like in terms of addressing the haters, he gets an A++ for that.
I thought it was so perfect.
I mean, it was so mature. It was so beautiful. It was so authentic.
And it's a great transition into what's topic one. So it's kind of connected to that, which is on how to think about the daily training grind in racing. This is from DW. We've gotten a lot of this, of what people starting racing and worried about judging themselves and all these different things. I was coaching the other day. I've really been into baseball.
David, you have been so into baseball. I come downstairs and he's coaching away and he's like telling me all these baseball stats as he's coaching. It's fascinating.
I feel like I'm, for some reason, I'm like becoming an old man, like in front of my very eyes. It's like baseball used to be so boring to me that I decided to change sports when I was in high school. And now I'm like, you know, I just like baseball being on the background and thinking about UFOs.
And it's not even like one set team either. Yeah. You're watching teams that are like the lowest in their division. You're like, oh, this is so amazing. They're crushing it.
162 games of boredom for most people. And
actually, that being said, really cool thing in baseball right now. Who is that pitcher who is hitting crazy home runs?
Oh my gosh. I don't even know. You mean Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, yeah.
From the, oh, I called
it. Oh, you pulled it out with your baseball knowledge. You're crushing it. I'm so proud of you, David. Yeah.
He's a two-way player. So he pitches and he hits. And we were watching live and saw him hit one of the highest exit velocity home runs of the year.
He smashed that home run. It was cool.
Yeah,
so baseball is very cool.
Baseball is very cool. But I was watching a game in Tyler Glasnow, who's one of the best pitchers in baseball right now. In the first inning, could not find the strike zone. I mean, he was throwing wild pitches. His curveballs were sailing over the catcher's head, or at least far outside. And I was watching this game. I was like, shoot, if I were a coach right now, I would take him out. Like, you do not want whatever this is to spiral into something really negative. And sure enough, he like worked through these jams. The bases got loaded. He worked through it. Got to the third inning. Only one run was given up. And the announcer said something I thought was fascinating. It's like, he has been working with a sports psychologist and he has a mantra. Every pitch is a new one.
I love that.
And he says every pitch.
That's an amazing mantra. Also, sports psychologist, amazing. Psychologist, amazing. But this also builds off of, so last podcast or two podcasts ago, we were talking about the mantra, just going 1-0.
Yeah.
So just thinking about the next game, the next, you know, if it's a workout, the next interval with the next, whatever it may be. And I think like every pitch is a new one is like a really fun extension of that.
And so he applied that. And he got a win in that game where, I mean, he has great stuff, but he could not find the plate. I have no idea how it happened. And coming back to it is like, well, the reason that I thought you have to take him out is I'm worried, okay, he's going to start, you know, he's going to have a little bit of a tough game. It's going to go really rough. It's all going to build off itself. And then his confidence is going to be shot and he's going to judge himself. And this pitcher that could have been one of the best in the world is going to end up going down these dark holes of thinking he isn't who he is. And no, he's just like, every pitch is a new one.
But I think what's fascinating about that though, and this is something that I'm not great at, is it requires your brain throwing these prior thoughts out to the ocean.
Yeah.
You know, it takes throwing those wild pitches and being like, just ridding it of the brain. And I think for me, like when I struggle with things or when I've failed or when things aren't going right, I find it loops in my brain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I'll be out doing a 10-mile run, looping like bad thoughts about myself or like things that have gone wrong in my life and just like replaying and over again and being like, Megan, you suck. And I think I need to get better at just like throwing those thoughts out to the ocean and being like, let's it's time to go 1-0.
Yeah, like you've ruminated in life, right? Like outside of running too. Like sometimes when a stressful thought, like you'll have stressful thoughts. And I actually, she's really progressed. In the old days, it used to be,
That's the noise I would make. And that would be like the signal to me. It's like, it's time to throw that out, that thought out to the ocean.
But now she's like, fuck. And that's so much more empowering.
It's so empowering.
And you know to toss it out. And I think that it gets back to our brains when it construct these big narratives. And I think often those will end up tearing us down eventually, because if it's going great, fine. That can serve you, but it doesn't go great for anyone all the time. Usually it goes pretty badly. And then in a sport like baseball, I mean, you're talking about hitters in baseball, you know, a 400 on base percentage is Hall of Fame.
And I think like constructing those big narratives too, with the idea that you're being watched.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's
so true.
That's fascinating to me too, is it's like, I feel like a lot of runners are in the public eye and they're out there racing, thinking about how am I going to construct this, or how am I going to share this on social media, or what's the blog post going to be thinking about, like the dot blogspot days back in the day.
And even if they're not professional athletes, I think we're all playing that. Like, what is my family going to think about this thing I'm doing if they might not be supportive or whatever? I used to think like, oh, are people constructing race reports while they're racing? And that to me was the ultimate liberating thought, because it's like, I never want to do that. I never want to be thinking about, okay, what is my story about this event or whatever going to be? Instead, it's like, okay, I'm going to stay in this thing and where it is. And it's so hard for me. And I have to constantly be like, okay, every pitch is a new one. Every mile is a new one. Every rep is a new one. And that's how to approach, you know, this training and racing grind, to get back to the question, is everything that you're doing is a new one. It's a new opportunity.
It's an opportunity to celebrate though. Yeah. And I think that's the coolest thing, is like truly celebrating every step of the way, but then it's celebrating your successes, but then also like really celebrating your failures. Yeah. Like, hey, I failed today. I got back up. That's awesome. Yeah. Or like
celebrating every rep, celebrating every pitch in its own little way is everything. So like what I always have tried to do is come back to that touchstone. Come back to the touchstone of celebration, you know, like when you do those sounds now, you're coming back to the touchstone of like gratitude, or it's all okay. Or, you know, you've told me all the different things you do. But with racing, that is so important, because if you're putting yourself out there with this, if you're not having a bad race sooner rather than later, you are selling yourself short and step up your potential.
Like, yeah.
You know, step into the arena and get vulnerable.
I was gonna say vulnerability. I was just about to bring that up. Oh, you read my mind. Yeah, we're rocking, man. Yeah, I think it's all about celebrating vulnerability, because that's life.
Yeah, and that's what running's about, is this microcosm of life. And I end on this topic with a woman that we coach on the team who had the greatest comment in her training log. Gorgeous day, but body wasn't really feeling it. Blank, her partner. And I always say to celebrate the days that feel amazing and have big dick energy on the days that you don't. And then the next day, she followed up. Clarification: big dick energy equals deriving confidence from self-belief instead of relying on results or a certain training day. Yeah.
I love that. Also, I ascribe a lot of different things and I replace big dick energy. So I'll be out running and I'll be like, look at the clouds today. Today is big cloud energy. Or like, I'll come back in from a run and there's delicious Fritos in the refrigerator and I'll be like, today is big Fritos energy. Or right now I'm looking at the cheddar cheese on my desk and I'm like, it's big cheese energy today.
Oh, we got so much big cheese energy.
So much big. We're bringing some real big cheese energy.
Yeah. So celebrate yourself so hard and all your big cheese energy, because that's like the whole point of running, I think.
Yeah, I love it. Do you want to transition to the second topic?
Let's do it.
This is from CA. It's on fears and phobias. I have run a few 50Ks and I'm signed up for a 12-hour race and 100K this year. The thing that's been holding me back the most from trying longer distance before now is emetophobia, which is a phobia of vomiting. Everyone with this phobia is different, but I'm afraid of it happening to myself or someone around me. Phobias are, by definition, irrational fears. And realistically, I know that if I throw up, it's not the end of the world, and actually I'll probably feel better after. But if I'm even a little nauseous or my stomach feels different, I can have a full-blown panic attack. As I'm typing this, I realize that you'll probably recommend seeing a therapist, which is definitely a good idea. But have you coached or encountered any runners that have dealt with this issue before? Let me start with this question by saying this person is 100% myself human. So this is me. I've had like a horrible fear of vomiting ever since being a five-year-old. I had neurovirus. And after then, I was like, vomiting is the worst. It's terrible. And quite frankly, it's impacted me physiologically. I'm incapable of vomiting. It's,
and you know,
I haven't vomited since age 5.
Megan is the most open person on earth, especially now. But I remember not even knowing the extent of this until pretty far into our relationship. Like, I'd be like, why are you being weird and like leaving the room when something happens? It's like, it must have been a trigger. I must have been witnessing a trigger to a phobia.
Well, it's funny because that fear was both for myself and for other people. I remember growing up watching the movie Home Alone and Kevin McAllister in that movie, like right in 5 minutes at the start, ate too much pizza and vomited. I was like, yep, can never watch that movie again. And it extended, actually, it's largely gone for me now because med school is amazing exposure therapy for vomiting. But I remember being in the emergency room as a medical student and, you know, the reeling trauma patients in, and that's where a lot of like medical students start getting kind of squeamish. And I was like, I would much rather go to that room with trauma than to go to the primary care patient who's vomiting, because that horrifies me. Vomiting is way worse than trauma. And this person coming in from a gunshot
wound. When you were in med school, I remember we were at a race and someone finished and they were looking like they had suffered a very serious fall. It did not look good at all. And what I remember Megan doing is saying, trauma, I'm going to help, and sprinting over as fast as she could. But that wouldn't have been good if it was something else.
Yeah. So I think for me, it's largely gone away over time just by, you know, medical school. It had to go away. I was seeing so many patients who were vomiting, but this has very much been like something that's affected me during my life. And I understand like just the amount of like struggle and fear and toughness that goes with this. It's common too. I mean, you look at the statistics on this, 6 to 7% of females have emetophobia, 1.7 to 3% of males. That's really common.
Yeah. Think about how many people that is across the whole population.
I mean, that's vast. I mean, you think about my med school class of 85, and there's at least a few other people who probably had that phobia that I never even talked with about this.
And what's really interesting to me is that basically everything works like that. If we start to actually dig into what the numbers are of people, if people are being fully honest about what they're experiencing, and that's a little daunting about the human experience, but also kind of liberating because all of our shit is shared.
It's a shared experience.
Yeah.
But I also think too, I mean, you get back to like, why is it so common? Yeah. I mean, 7%, that's high. That's like a significant number of females that may be experiencing this. And, you know, 3% of males, that's really, really high. But I think this gets back to like an evolutionary thing of fear.
Yeah. Like something's programmed into the brain, like into our neurology to respond in this manner to certain stimuli sometimes, usually when we're young, but not always. Like it can be any traumatic experience at any point that creates this fear response that turns into a phobia or turns into any other sort of trauma response. And that's really hard. It's
really hard. And also, I often think that like highly intelligent human beings probably have fears more often because it's like your brain is just thinking constantly. And what is thinking constantly but thinking about really big, scary things out in the world?
Oh my gosh, like UFOs.
Yeah, right?
So sometimes they can be clinical phobias like the ones that we have heard of. I actually hadn't heard of emetophobia before, but fear of flying is very common. Fear of public speaking, where they really become physical responses.
Yeah, that's also me. I got two of these on the ones we're discussing.
Yeah, two of three.
Yeah, look at this. Look at this.
God, we need a
I don't mind flying though. I'm like passed out on the plane. Like totally unaware.
Yeah, before I met Megan, I had almost never taken a flight. And then I've taken a ton. I was really nervous when we first met. And then maybe like other subclinical associations that could amount to phobias, but perhaps we wouldn't think of them that way. So like fear of injury, fear of failure, fear of rejection, like maybe more emotional responses. But all this stuff is super common and that sucks, but it's also like a chance for us to understand that like give people compassion because what you're seeing isn't the whole story. There is a lot of iceberg under that tip.
Oh, that's a beautiful analogy. I love that. And I think really working with like a therapist or a psychologist or someone who can really help uncover that iceberg and like figure out like what's going on is so helpful.
Help you, because I think inside of our own brains, like we can't think ourselves out of this box. We need someone
alone.
We need someone to help us like to grab the box top and just help it open.
Well, I think the other thing too is it's probably really triggering to do it alone. And I think like having someone with you, like a therapist or professional, medical professional, can help guide you in that process in a way that like holds you accountable, but also guides you through like the trauma. Like, because inevitably you're going to have trauma that comes up from thinking back to the past about these things that may be associated or like doing exposure therapy or any of these things.
Yeah. It's all high stakes game. I mean, one of my most interesting stories I've seen is Thibaut Pinot, professional French cyclist. So in 2013, he saw a crash in the Tour de France. And for some reason that tripped a wire in his brain where all of a sudden he got extremely fearful of descending to the point that most of the articles I read called it a phobia. He got dropped on a descent, dropped out of that tour altogether. And it became something that he's dealt with and had to deal with for years.
And it's funny because when I saw that story, I was like, oh my gosh, like I get it. You know, I mean, I've had these phobias before, so I totally get it. Also biking is scary. So I also get
scary.
That. But I'm like, I look at that and I'm like, oh my gosh, Thibaut Pinot is probably brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, you know, his brain is just probably thinking a lot about the situation and, you know, he's probably smart. I'm sure that, you know, super tucking at 60 miles an hour in the tour probably isn't great.
Yeah. Like, probably evolutionarily our brains are programmed at some level to be like, no,
not doing that.
Not for me.
Yeah.
And he's worked through it and he's back and he's like a champion cyclist, but he's still asked about it all the time, right? Like all of these things we're dealing with, they're still going to be there. That doesn't mean like, you know, they're there and occupying all of our thoughts, but like, you know, the fact that you live with these things and can learn to give them a hug rather than reject them and like fight them, that's an important part of the process.
But also, too. I think it gives you a lot of empathy for what other people are going through too, because it's like, you know, if so many people have these different phobias or fears across every, like, you know, you can Google like any object and there is a fear of that object. And it's like, that gives you empathy for the human existence of what we're all going through with these different fears and phobias.
Well, I don't want to minimize any type of phobia, because what I have isn't like, I would say like a classic clinical presentation. So it's not like, doesn't amount to that. But when we were talking about dancing, we weren't joking. Like, I kind of do fear dancing.
Yeah. Like,
you know,
hardcore,
the fear response. Like, to me, it's something that like, I will plan a schedule differently so that I can show up after the dancing or before the dancing or whatever. And that's, I know it's ridiculous.
I mean, it even extends, like, there'll be Friday nights where we'll be drinking wine in the kitchen. And I'm like, it's time to get groovy. Let's dance. Let's have some fun. And you're like, no.
It's like, turn around so you can't see me. And then I'm like, that's the best angle anyway. But you know, I understand it's crazy. I understand I have someone that loves me unconditionally, and I still have that feeling, right?
And I'm the same. I was the same way with vomiting until I went to med school.
And I mean, that's public speaking. You've worked through it, and but
like, well, I'm still working through it. Yeah, I still have moments with public speaking where I'm like, I'm panicked.
Yeah. So you know, when you're to the questioner, so sorry you're going through that, but also, heck yeah, it's probably connected to what makes you brilliant. It's probably connected to being fucking human. And that's so beautiful. And so we looked online and mainly just wanted to look at the two steps of this and also dealing with almost all fears. The first is to try to understand at some level that there might be a root cause of this issue. It's not always that direct, but sometimes there is. And that root cause has a lot of power.
Yeah. And I think going back, and there's so many different things that you can do to address that root cause. So you can do like EMDR, which like kind of helps you process and work through that. Granted, I don't know. I've tried EMDR before and my brain is like, fuck that. I'm not being hypnotized. But I think like for some people, it really works. Also like cognitive behavioral therapy, exposure therapy, like all of these different things, working with a psychologist can really help.
This is the part where working with an expert is so key. And I need to have a dancing expert help me, because we are not the best judges of our own neurological processes ever. And so the things that like, even if you're a psychologist, I've heard that they need to have psychologists, because you know, the next step is so hard to take. And so once you start that, you can start to gain a little bit of understanding, not control, but understanding. And once you have understanding, a lot of great things can happen.
And then I think step two is taking that understanding and thinking about reassociating. And I think like reassociating this thing is like, this is like a part of who I am. Like, okay, this is here. I'm going to work through this, but also like, you know, celebrating working through it and that process of it. And I think in that process, like communicating it and being open about it is so key. Like I know for me, like when I opened up about like, oh, my fear of public speaking, or now my fear of vomiting, like it just creates this like shared experience for other people. And like, it helps you in that process too.
Yeah. I mean, for me with Megan, like to, you know, the minimal thing of dancing, Megan's like, I love you. You're good. I love you. And over and over and over again, that gets me to a point where I can even do a dance.
Actually, I think my response was, I was just like moving your limbs for you.
Yeah.
I was like, let's take your arms. We're going to do this. We got this.
No. I was like a marionette being twerked on. It was fantastic. And I think the main thing is when you're communicating, understand that your fears are shared, maybe not shared by every single individual, but like humanity as a whole, this stuff is ubiquitous. It's how our brains work. It's how, I mean, it's like you were saying, like if you think about the universe enough, it's fucking scary.
And it's interesting.
Yeah.
Like this is the stuff that makes us human. Like, you know, you talk about like, I think it's like a really interesting part of what makes us. Like, you know, I had this, I mean, we spent 7 minutes talking about my fear of vomiting. Yeah. That's entertaining. It's interesting. And now I look back and I'm like, oh, hey, that's funny.
You know?
And it's like, I feel like it's so, I don't know. It's just, it's fascinating.
And this
to talk
stuff
about.
Can be like debilitating, and, you know, get help, make sure you're talking to people. That weight vest that you're carrying around, whether it's depression, whether it's fear, whether it's a clinical phobia, all these different things, like other people have weight vests too. And other people can help carry some of that weight for you just by letting them in.
That's beautiful.
So yeah, let's just share our weight vests with people as much as you possibly can. Even if it's a little uncomfortable, even if like, you know, if you're like me and you're at a wedding and you're like, are you sure I should dance? I'm dancing this summer.
Oh, let's do it. I'm so pumped. There's going to be videos. Actually, I won't video. Well, there's going to be a lot of whiskey.
Megan's like, I want to light the fire on the studio once more time, but a lot of whiskey I can do.
A lot of whiskey. Let's do it.
So we love you guys. Rate, review, subscribe, do all that stuff.
Thanks, everyone.
Woo-hoo!
Bye.